We're continuing with Parshat Vayeshev. We had learned how Yaakov, after all his troubles, wanted some peace. And it doesn't work that way in life. Life is about overcoming challenges. So Yosef gets preferential treatment. Yosef is 17 years old. 7 years have passed since the passing of Rachel. That means at this point in history, Leah dies. They got married when they were 22. Leah and Rachel were twins. They were both 22 when they got married. And you have 7 years that Yaakov is working for Lavan afterwards. And another 6 years that Yaakov works for profit. So that's 13 years. So now they are 35. And then Rachel dies the next year at age 35. She dies during that following year. And then 7 years later, at 42, Leah dies. So 7 years later is when Yosef is 17. That's our parsha. So Yaakov is now, he has Bilhah and Zilpah. Those are the two wives. And Leah's kids are zealous about the idea that Bilhah and Zilpah are not equal. Even though right now they're the remaining two wives, but they're not equal. And their kids are not equal. And Yosef insists on treating them equally. Yes, sir. It's a good question. We discussed it last week. You could bring it up Thursday night. Say there. It's last week's parsha. So, Leah. I don't know. That I don't know. Why Leah had to die so young? I don't know. Right? I don't know. That I don't know. I don't know. So, Yosef has a dream. And he tells them his dream. We're making bundles. My bundle stood up, and your bundles all surrounded them and bowed to my bundle. This dream represents the idea that Yosef will ultimately feed everyone, and they will all bow to him. And the brothers right away say, you think you'll be king because we'll appoint you? You think you'll be king because you will be more powerful than us? Neither one's going to come true. And they hate him even more, because we said people dream what they're thinking about by day. So they say, this is what you're thinking about by day. That's why it's come to you as a dream by night. So they're very upset with him. And he has another dream. And he tells his brothers, we have a rule that when a person sees a prophecy, they have to give it over. Yosef understood these dreams to be prophetic, and in some way he was right. So he tells them, I dreamt that the sun and the moon and the 11 stars are bowing to me. Who's the sun? Yaakov Avinu's nickname is the sun. That we saw in last week's parasha. So when he tells him the dream, Yaakov right away thinks, how did he know that? He said, the sun is me. How did he know that? And his father gets upset at him and he says, your mother's dead. How is she going to come bow to you? So he says a line which is hurtful, but he's trying to get the brothers to calm down to see that he's not on Yosef's side. But he's really waiting to see the dream come true. And our sages say, we learned from Yaakov, you had a good dream, wait 22 years to see it come true. Because it took 22 years till it came true. And here we see a point which I mentioned in the WhatsApp message last week, Yaakov's ability to wait. What? Yaakov's ability to wait. So the brothers go out to Shechem. And that's a very dangerous place to be going. They almost had war there. Last week we discussed maybe they had war there. And they're going to graze the sheep in Shechem. The Medrash says every night they would send a different brother back to help Yaakov out. Yaakov tells Yosef, I want to send you to your brothers. Yosef is not happy with the mission. Not so happy to be with them alone. But his father asks him, so he says, I'm ready to go. And here we see the greatness of Yosef. His father asked him for something, I'm ready to go. Even though he was not happy. And he knew it was not going to be a fun journey. So his father says, I want you to check out how they're doing. I want you to check out how the sheep are doing. Again, here we see Yosef was smarter than them. Here we see that his father is sending the youngest, almost youngest son, to check up on the other brothers, how they're taking care of themselves and the sheep. And there's a reason for it. It's because Yosef is talented. And so he sends him from the depths of Hebron. The only problem is Hebron isn't in the depths. Hebron's on a mountain. So the Gemara asks, what does the pasuk mean? He sent him from the depths of Hebron. So one interpretation is he sent him from the depths because he walked him all the way down the mountain to the depths before he saw him off. And the pasuk is teaching us how you're supposed to take care of someone. Walk him. Take care of him. Yaakov Avinu's sons let him go alone that night, and he got wounded. When Yaakov is sending his son Yosef, he accompanies him. How many times do you should walk your kid to the bus stop and wait with him there till he boards the bus? There's a show of affection. There's a show of concern. So, Emek Hebron, our sages say, the first interpretation is he walked him down to the valley. He walked him from the mountain down to the valley. Another interpretation is that when he sent him, this was the beginning of the depths of Hebron. There was the deep plan of Hebron. What's the deep plan of Hebron? Hebron comes from the word chaver. Who's the chaver of Hebron? Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is the one who is considered, so to speak, the friend of God. The one who went out of his way to convert, who said, I'm connecting. Yitzchak was born into it. Yaakov was born into it. Avram wasn't. So Avram is unique. As the Navi says, Ki echad, one was Avram. Avram is singular. And so the deep plan that Hashem had told Avraham that there'd be an exile, it's about to start now. When Yaakov sends him off, the pasuk is telling you it's from the depths of Hebron. It's from the depths of the connection of Avram Avinu, who knew that there would be this long exile. Now it's starting. And Yosef comes to Shechem. Shechem is historically a bad place for the Jewish people. The Gemara says, in the history of the Jewish people, we've always had bad things happen to us in Shechem. So Shechem is where the brothers will sell Yosef. Bad. Shechem is where Dina is violated. Bad. Shechem is where the Jewish people decide to sever their connection with the house of David. Bad. So Chazal tell us the place matters. Sometimes there's a place where bad things happen. So Yosef's headed to a place where bad things happen to the Jewish people. He's on his way, and he meets up with the man. He's lost. And the man asks him, what are you looking for? And our tradition is that this man was the angel Gavriel. So that means Hashem is helping the story play itself out. Chazal say what should have happened is very different. Everything should have worked out right. Yosef could have gone to the field, not find them, come back and say, Dad, I didn't find them. And then everyone would stay and live a happy life in Israel. And then a group of armed robbers would show up at their house, take away everything they own, put Yaakov Avinu and the whole family in shackles, take them down to Egypt, sell them each into a different part of Egypt into slavery, and the next 400 years or 210 years would be the fulfillment of the promise Hashem told Avram, your descendants will be slaves in Egypt. So in heaven, there was two options for how this decree would play itself out. Option number one was having these pirates show up at Yaakov's house, take over Yaakov and his whole family, and bring them down to Egypt in shackles. They'll all be sold into slavery, and the next 210 years they'll be slaves, and then Moshe Rabbeinu will come on the scene and they'll leave Egypt. Hashem said, I'm not going to do it that way. Let me do it more respectful. Let me get Yosef down there, and Yosef will suffer a little bit. And then Yosef will become king, and Yaakov will come down to Egypt. All of Egypt will come out to honor him. And then the Jewish people will descend into Egypt gently, peacefully. And in Egypt, they'll live respectful lives. And then over time, it'll evolve into slavery. But let me do it in a gentle way. The decree was hanging. The idea that we would end up as slaves in Egypt had to happen. How it would happen? So Hashem sends the angel Gavriel to make sure Yosef gets to the brothers. So he tells them, I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're shepherding the sheep? And the angel answers him, they've left that. What have they left? Your brothership. They're not connected to you anymore. The word ach means connected. When you stitch two sides of a tear together, that's called mitache. You've connected the two sides. The word ach means connected. And he tells them, they've left that. I heard them saying, we're going to Dotaina. We're going to figure out a religious reason to kill Yosef. And Yosef goes in pursuit of his brothers. Yosef doesn't give up on the relationship. So the angel warns him, it's over, Yosef. And Yosef goes to pursue his brothers. And he finds them there. And Chazal tell us they saw him from afar. They pulled the bow and arrow. Shimon says to Levi, one shot, I finish him off. And they send dogs. They sick him at him. And the arrow doesn't work. And the dogs doesn't work. And nothing works. And here the Torah is very kind to us. The Torah doesn't reveal to us the gory details of what happens next. But as we move forward in the Torah and we reach Parshat Vayigash, as we reach Parshat Miketz, so over there the brothers 22 years later will be recollecting what happened. Right now Yosef is 17. At age 30, Yosef's going to become king 13 years later. And then there are going to be 7 years of plenty. That puts us at 20 years will pass. And then 2 years of famine before Yosef and the brothers have it out, right? So it's going to be 22 years till Yosef reveals himself to the brothers. 22 years later, as they're standing in front of Yosef, we're going to hear the brothers talking. And then the Torah will reveal to us what happened. The brothers will say, you know why we're in such hot water with this king? Alachinu. It's all because of what happened to our brother 22 years ago. Asher ra'inu tzarat nafsho. We saw him. And he was suffering. Bitchanenu eleinu. He begged us. Ve'lo shamanu. And we refused to listen. The brothers, 22 years later, will reveal to us what the Torah does not reveal over here. The Torah just says, before he came, they decided they were going to kill him. They said one to the other, there's the dreamer coming. Let's kill him and throw him in one of the pits. And we'll say one of the wild animals must have killed him. Let's see what happens to his dreams next. Reuven says, throw him into the pit. When Yosef shows up, they take off his clothing and they throw him in the pit. Doesn't say the details. But when you read forward, you suddenly hear they were taking off his cloak and Yosef was begging, you're my brothers, don't do this to me. And Yosef was begging, can you have some mercy on me? Why are you doing this? And the brothers refused to listen. So the Torah doesn't tell us the cruel aspects of the story over here. Later on, 22 years later, when he's already sitting on the throne and things have worked out well in his life, then the Torah goes back and tells you, you know what really happened there? There was a very, very difficult moment where the brothers were prepared to take such harsh actions because they believed they were right. And that's one of the scariest things in life. On the one hand, we work with principles. We work with the Torah. And so when we want to know what's right, we try to do what the Torah says. And yet, a person can do very terrible things in the name of the Torah, believing that he's fighting for the Torah. And that's why it's important to try and get an answer from someone who's external. When we're dealing with real life big questions, the fact that we feel like we're fighting for the Torah is not enough. It's important to go outside. Let's get someone who's not partial. Let's get someone who has a Torah perspective and he's outside the box. And let's ask him, what does the Torah say? What am I supposed to do here? In life, it's very hard. The Gemara says, Adam karov etzel atzmo. Every person is close to himself. It's an interesting term, the Gemara says. You're close to yourself. I didn't know I was close to myself. I thought I was myself. What does that mean, I'm close to myself? Now the Gemara is saying, just like you're partial for your brother because you're close to him, you're close to yourself. There's a partiality that we don't necessarily notice. And so we have to try and find someone outside. and ask them, wait, what's right over here? Now what's challenging here is that we don't always want to listen when someone outside tells us something. The brothers over here are going to make a move. On the one hand, it's 10 people. They all came to the same conclusion. What's their conclusion? Their conclusion is, we're the descendants of Yaakov Avinu. We have a job, we have a mission in this world. We have to continue the light of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And that's our job. What's Yosef doing? He's doing the same thing Esav does. He's coming and giving our father good things to eat, and he's telling our father all kinds of stories, and he's trying to convince Yaakov that we're all not a part of the Jewish people. So he is threatening all of us. All of us are the continuation of Yaakov, and he's saying, no, you're not. Reuven's wrong because of this. Shimon and Levi are wrong because of that. Every one of us has to suffer from Yosef's slander. He's saying Lashon Hara to our father, and he is really endangering our future as a Jewish people. So if Yaakov was willing to trick his father to make sure that Esav was out of the lot of the Jewish people, so Yaakov took the blessings, so we can also trick our father and make sure that Yosef is out of the picture. Ah, Yosef's worse than Esav. Let's see how far it can go, right? Yosef is worse than Esav because Yosef wants us dead. Yosef is saying things about us that risk our whole future as a Jewish people. Yaakov never went against Esav. Esav doesn't speak bad about Yaakov. Esav is busy showing how he's a tzaddik, but he's not busy showing Yaakov's a rasha. Yosef, he's worse than Esav. That's how far it can go. Meaning once we start a certain line of reasoning, so it can go very far. So it reaches a point where the brothers say, halachically we're allowed to kill Yosef. Yosef is the din of a rodef. When someone's trying to destroy your life to kill you, you're allowed to kill them first. He's trying to kill us, we're allowed to kill him first. Ah. So now they've come up with a halachic reason that they're allowed to kill Yosef. They were not far from the mark. When we read the story, on the one hand, it's a stain on the Jewish people forever. The Kohen Gadol on the holiest day, he slaughters a goat to commemorate the goat that was slaughtered, as the brothers had baseless hatred between them and Yosef. So we try to rectify that. Part of the procession of Yom Kippur, the two goats, the lots, the slaughtering, the Holy of Holies, there's a reflection of this story in that. So our sages tell us. The goats of Yom Kippur, to some degree, are coming to atone for what's about to happen here between Yosef and his brothers. The flip side is that they weren't so far off. You see that Hashem participated with them. There's an element where Hashem says they're right. You see, Hashem sent the angel Gabriel to ensure the story plays itself out. So on the one end, we will pay a price for this story. For over a millennium later, we're going to pay a price for this story. Our sages say that the 10 martyrs that we read about in Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur were a real claim on the Jewish people. That we lived for the next millennium with a claim in heaven that God said, look at you, you're Jewish people, you're all descendants of that baseless hatred between the brothers and Yosef. So when you have the 10 martyrs, we know the story, we read it on Yom Kippur, the 10 great tzaddikim who were tortured to death. On one level, our sages say, yeah, this was a stain we had on us for all that time. On the other hand, they weren't so far off. There was an element where Yosef was endangering their future. There was an element where Yosef was doing something very, very wrong by putting down his brothers. So, Yosef's huge, the brothers are huge, and the friction that's going on between them is not so simple. Reuven did do something wrong. And Yosef did tell his father who did something wrong. Who's right in this story? Everyone's wrong. Reuven's wrong. Yosef's wrong. Everyone's wrong on some level. And everyone's right on some level. There's justice with both sides and there's fault with both sides. So Yosef comes to the brothers. And everything they've tried hasn't worked. They sent vicious dogs against him and they can't touch him. They tried shooting their arrows and nothing happens. Reuven tells them, why should we kill him? Throw him into one of these pits in the desert. Let him die a natural death. And Reuven's intentions are, I'll bring him back home. Here we see how extraordinary Reuven is. Reuven knows full well that Yosef is the one who bumped him out of his rights to the firstborn. Reuven knows that his father was very upset by the fact that he moved the beds into Leah's tent. Reuven knows, as it says in Divrei Hayomim in Chronicles, that at that moment Yaakov said, once Yosef revealed that it was Reuven who did it, so Yaakov said, Reuven lost his rights to double portion, he lost his rights to the throne, he lost his rights to the priesthood. Yosef, you're getting the double portion of Reuven. So it's in Reuven's interest to let Yosef be wiped out, right? Here we see what a tzaddik Reuven was. He's busy doing tshuva. So he says, Yosef isn't my threat. My own actions are my threat. I have to become a better person. I'm having problems because I did something wrong. Yosef isn't my problem. On the contrary, I can't hurt that. I have to make sure Yosef gets back home safe. And our sages say that when Leah named him Reuven, the word Reuven means look at this son. She was looking at this moment in his lifetime. She was looking at this moment when Reuven steps up to the plate, and in this moment he saves his life. And here there's a Gemara that's quoted often, and it's worth thinking about this Gemara. The Gemara says, had Reuven known that every year all the Jewish people would read the story of how Reuven saved Yosef, so then Reuven would have said, give the boy to me, take in Yosef, put him on his shoulders, he's a 17 years old, put him on his shoulders and ran away from the brothers to bring him back home to Yaakov Avinu. Chazal say, had Reuven known that this would be recorded and everyone would read it, he wouldn't just say, don't kill him, put him in a pit, and Reuven has the plan to come at night and take him. He would have done more. So our sages here revealed to us numerous insights. They say, number one, as great as Reuven was, he could have been better. He could have given him a piggyback ride home. But they're also telling us that every one of us, even big tzaddikim like Reuven, if we feel like we're going to get recognition for what we do right, then we're going to do more right. Yeah? On the one end, we always quote the Zohar that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that Hashem loves mitzvot that are done quietly. Every mitzvah is magnified when it's done in tzniut. That's true. But on the other end, we also have to know that we have a need for recognition. And recognition gives us the strength to do more. So that's insightful to us in terms of how we can help someone else. If we saw someone do something right and we gave them recognition, so then we've just empowered them to do more right. It strengthens, every person gets strengthened when they get recognition. It's not a big thing to do, but once you do it, you strengthen them. And in Miriam Adahan's book, I think, no, in Rabbi Zelig Pliskin's book, he writes that when man is faced with a challenge, if there's a mitzvah that you find hard to do, so imagine Madison Square Garden. You guys heard of Madison Square Garden? It's this big arena. How many people can fit into Madison Square Garden? Quarter of a million people? I don't know, a lot of people. I don't know how many, but it's a big arena. So imagine Madison Square Garden. And there's a basketball player, and he shoots. And he gets the winning basket. And the whole crowd jumps to their feet, and a quarter of a million people roar. How does he feel that minute, where the whole crowd roars in his favor, that he just shot the winning basket? He's on top of the world, right? So Rabbi Zelig Pliskin, I think it's him in his book, he writes, when we're about to do a mitzvah, and it's difficult for us to do that mitzvah, we should stop and imagine, all around me is Madison Square Garden. I'm going to do what's right. They're all going to stand on their feet and give me a roar of applause. If we can imagine that credit, that recognition, it'll give us strength to do what's right.
And they roar, even I can hear it in my garden. It's 2 minutes, 3 minutes away from the stadium. They hear it when they go.
So Rabbi Zelig Pliskin is taking it from this Gemara, that had Reuven recognized the recognition, it would have given him the strength to do even better. We all need it. We all need it.
Where is that from?
Where's that Gemara? Ilu aya Reuven yodeya. I don't remember right now. Remind me, I'll look for it. Don't remember right now. I have in mind it's an Erevin, but I'm not sure that's right. Remind me, Bezrat Hashem, I'll look. So Yosef comes, they take off that chosen garment, and they throw him into the pit. The pit has snakes and scorpions, and they move away from the pit. They sit down to eat. Reuven went to Hilltop. He's still working on his tshuva. Here we see how much work tshuva requires. 7 years have passed since he did that mistake of moving his father's bed, and he's still working on his tshuva. And perhaps we see how he worked on his tshuva and his behavior towards Yosef, how he was able to save his life. And the brothers are sitting down to eat. Now, Halacha says that when a court executes someone, they're not allowed to eat that day. After a court executed someone, they're not allowed to eat. They have to fast the remaining of the day. But wait a second, the guy deserved the death penalty. He was a wicked Jew, that's why he got killed. Doesn't matter. But here Yosef's still alive and kicking. Yosef's in the pit yelling, guys, take me out of here, don't do this to me. So they can eat. So they sit down to eat. And they see a caravan of Yishmaelim. Yishmaelim means they're descendants of Yishmael. They're nomadic tribes. And they're carrying all kinds of perfumes to take down to sell in Egypt. Now, the Arabs, the Yishmaelim, would ordinarily be dealing with hides. They didn't. They wouldn't deal with perfumes. This was unusual to have a caravan carrying perfumes. So Yehuda says to the brothers, what profit is there in killing him and just letting him die here? We might as well sell him, and this way we didn't kill him. And our sages say what a shame it is for Yehuda, that in order to save his brother, he says, what profit is in it for us? It's a shame, the Talmud says, that Yehuda began his statement, let's save the life of our brother, because otherwise we made no money. To say for a profit, we'll do it, that's, the Gemara says, it's a shame. So Yehuda tells them, he's our brother, he's our flesh, let's sell him to the Yishmaelim, we shouldn't be the ones to kill him. But the story is far more gruesome, because Yosef is a good-looking lad, and he's a white boy, and they're selling him into Egypt, where he's an exception. And what the Torah tells us in next week's parsha, when the brothers go searching for Yosef, is that they went searching for him in the brothels. They said, he's a good-looking guy, that's where he'll be. Now, in Egypt, they took young men, and they were also sold into forced prostitution. And that's exactly where Yosef's going to be sold to. When Yosef is purchased by Potiphar, Potiphar purchases him to be a boy who will be his male prostitute. Meaning Potiphar's intentions are to sleep with Yosef, which was a norm in Egypt. Now, it wasn't only in Egypt. That's Plato writes about this. This was accepted in Greek and Roman culture as well. So when they sell Yosef, they pull him out of the pit naked. Yosef is being pulled out of the pit and being sold without clothing to the Yishmaelim for 20 coins. And if this is a stain on the Jewish people for centuries to come, we can understand. The story is terrible. And they take Yosef down to Egypt. Now our sages say he looked so pale from the story that he had just underwent that they couldn't get more than 20 coins for him. Because he looked sickly. And then later on it's going to say the Midianites sold him. So our sages say the Yishmaelim bought him, they sold him to the Midianites. The Midianites bought him, they sold him to new Yishmaelim. They come down to Egypt, they want to sell him. The Egyptians say, how do you get a white boy? This boy looks like he's a Canaanite. You guys are, you're a bunch of pirates. You captured someone, you're selling him to us, and in a few days, his family's going to come down and say he's not a slave and that you have no rights to him, and they'll take him from us by force. So we don't believe he's a slave. So they went back and they looked for the Midianites who had sold him. And they said, you come testify. So they had the previous caravans saying, sure, we bought him as a slave. This is a slave. And so he was purchased by the upper class by a man named Potiphar. So Potiphar, who is the executioner of Pharaoh, Potiphar is very wealthy, and Potiphar has a wife who's a big tzaddiket. Now, Potiphar buys Yosef with the sole intention of taking him for his pleasures, but our sages say the angel Gabriel showed up and castrated Potiphar, whatever that means. There was an accident. Something happened, and Potiphar found himself to be a eunuch. The Gemara says he was castrated so deeply that it was like he was torn in half. So he had no male prowess whatsoever. There was nothing he could do. Everything was gone from him. So after he purchases Yosef, he finds himself completely inept. Just a second. But that's a Gemara in Sota. If we read the Psukim, Potiphar is a eunuch. He's always been a eunuch. And that would explain a Medrash Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. The Medrash says that when Dina came back to Yaakov's house, she was pregnant from Shechem. Shechem had violated Dina, and Dina was pregnant. When Dina gave birth to a baby girl, so her brothers, Shimon and Levi, said, there's one more person from Shechem left to kill. And they were sharpening their knives to kill the baby of Dina. And Yaakov walks into the picture and says, you don't do that. This baby is a Jew. You're not allowed to kill this baby. And then Yaakov says to Dina, I can't trust them. They killed the city of Shechem behind my back. I have no way of knowing what accidents might happen in this house when you and I aren't looking. If you want this baby to live, we have to make sure this baby grows up somewhere else. And so Dina agreed that there was no way for them to be confident that the baby would grow up well. And so Yaakov takes the baby down to Egypt. And he does some research. Who is the pious family in Egypt that will bring up this girl to be a pious lady? And so Yaakov comes up with this Potiphar, whose wife is a very pious woman. And Potiphar's a eunuch. So he has nothing to worry about. His wife wants to have children. She can't. Her husband's a eunuch. So what does he do? Yaakov gives her a locket, and he wraps a locket. He ties a locket around her neck, and inside the locket is her story. You are a Jew. Your mother is a Jew. For your own benefit, we had to send you down here. We were scared of what would happen to you if you stuck around the family. We love you. We are your family. You should know you're one of ours. And he writes her this letter, and he closes it in the locket, and he asks Potiphar's wife, she should always have that locket growing up. Promise me one thing. You'll take good care of her, and she should have that locket. And they do take good care of her. And this girl, Osnat, grows up in Potiphar's house, and she's a very pious girl. In tonight's WhatsApp message, you're going to hear about her piety, Be'ezrat Hashem. So Osnat is in Potiphar's house, and Potiphar purchases Yosef. So now Yosef, the 17-year-old young man, is brought into Potiphar's house. As we said, there's nothing for Potiphar to do from what he thought he would do with Yosef. But Yosef is going to start working in Potiphar's house. There's a girl there. How many years have passed since the story of Shechem? 7 years. There's a 7-year-old, 6.5-year-old girl there, Osnat. Okay, Osnat is the pious girl in Potiphar's house. Yosef is the 17-year-old working in Potiphar's house. And we'll continue with our story later on. Now we have to shift back to Israel. So Yosef has been sold on the slave market. He has gone from being the top person in the world, from being Yaakov's right-hand man, from being the continuation of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the only son who gets told the secrets of the tradition. All the other sons were not taught as much as Yosef, and now he finds himself on the bottom of the bottom rung. He's in Mitzrayim, who are really the sons of Ham. They should be slaves, and he's a slave to slaves. And according to some of the commentaries, he doesn't know if his father agreed to sell him. He's in Egypt, and he knows all his brothers turned against him, as far as he knows. Even the brothers who he had helped, the sons of the servants. He's in Egypt, and he doesn't know if this was part of his father's plan when his father sent him to the brothers. He's in Egypt, and what the brothers tell him as they get rid of him is they say, every family had one like you. Avram had a Yishmael, he wasn't part of the family. Yitzchak had an Esav, he wasn't part of the family. And Abba had a Yosef, obviously you don't belong in the family. You're out and good riddance. And they're sending him out with a message. Yosef, let's see how those dreams work out. You thought you were threatening all of us, you're not. You are the one who's not a part of the family. And with that, he's being sold down to Egypt. Now, let's stop and ask ourselves, what type of servant would we be if we had just undergone this experience where all the people who were supposed to be my people, my monotheists, people who believed like me, right? My family, they didn't only turn on him. They sold him to forced prostitution. They sold him naked for a pair of shoes. They told him, you're not one of us. Ask yourself for a minute, what type of human being comes out of such a situation? What type of person are you after that? How do you deal with your boss? How do you deal with society around you? What do many people do? They say, you have no idea what I've been through. You have no idea. So I can be the most miserable, decrepit human being because you know what I went through? Even my family turned on me. Yosef teaches us, he's called Yosef HaTzadik, because Yosef holds himself to a standard irrespective of what life has dealt him. Yosef says, I have to be a tzaddik. Hashem et Elokim ani yare. After everything, the most faithful people in his life have turned on him. And so his master's wife comes to him and says, sleep with me. She's chasing him day in and day out. Why not? Excuse me, her husband's a eunuch. Why not? God? Well, look at what God's done to me. Well, why not? Ah, no. Et Elokim ani yare. I fear God. And it doesn't matter what life has dealt me. Et Elokim ani yare. The declaration of Yosef. I live by these standards. I can't do different. What do you mean you can't do different? You know what God's done to you? Yosef, look at the big picture. Where's God in your life? Ah, we're going to see. Our sages say, why were they carrying perfumes? Because even as Yosef is being sold naked into slavery, Hashem is saying, I'll take care of you. You'll have perfume. Who cares if you have perfume? The man's being sold into prostitution, naked, away from his whole family. He cares if it's perfume? So our sages say, pay attention in life. Even as bad things happen, Hashem gives us these little snippets of things that are good so we could recognize that Hashem is softening the blow. There are things there, call it the silver lining, call it the little chocolate chip you got as you got the big blow. But you were given the chocolate chip. We have to see it in our lives as well. So Yosef is living up to the ideal, even at a time where any other person might say, I'm perfectly legitimate in being embittered. Yosef doesn't take that excuse. That's not relevant. The truth is, et Elokim ani yare, I fear Hashem. Yosef is a giant of Jewish history, to the point where I don't think we can even understand how great a person can be. But he gives us something to aspire to. We'll pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem, Thursday night.